All right, let's bring in Bobby V right now. This should be interesting. Bobby, welcome. How are you?
Michael, how are you?
Good.
It's been a while.
Good, Bobby. I have to admit, I saw you on TV today. I wasn't watching, but I was in the newsroom, and I said, I got to get Bobby on to talk about the Mets, because who better to talk about the Mets or give us his view of the chaos that is occurring than Bobby V. And although you went through some odd things at times, I don't think they reached yesterday's standard, Bobby, from what I saw. Yesterday was one of the more chaotic baseball days I ever remember.
I guess, Mike, I think because it's a different time, you know. As you mentioned earlier in your show, you know, we had a couple little discussions with the door closed.
Yeah, like an hour one day, yeah. Nose to nose. I mean, yes, I remember that well.
A lot of topics being discussed, and it was almost two or three languages, I guess,
yes,
that we were speaking.
That is true. Right? That got pretty heated. Yeah. I said, you know, they're talking about a 5-minute. They're talking about two guys passing in the hall. I said, heck, one day Bobby and I went nose to nose for an hour.
And I just, you know, I wonder. I just think it's a different time. And you know what? Whatever. I try to figure out what's going on, and there's usually three sides to the story, right? You know, the management side, and then the reporter side, and then what really happened. But I tried to put myself in the manager's seat, and after a tough loss and maybe some really tough questions and maybe some innuendo on whether or not my job security was actually secure. And then when the guy left, if he said, see you tomorrow, but if he said it with a question, you know, Mark, at the end, like, see you tomorrow,
yep,
maybe, you know. I think it probably would have gotten under my skin, too.
Now, what happened
after all that? That seemed a little like a three-ring circus, but I've experienced those also.
You know, when you look at the team right now, what do you see?
I see a good team. I see a team that should be at least head-to-head with the competition in the National League East, which I don't think is all that good. So, and I see a team that can get on a big run. I mean, it really could if they get over those seventh inning jitters a few times and close out a few games. I see they have the talent that they can make a big run, but I don't know. It's confusing.
You know, they have too many guys at the same positions, too. They don't have they got outfielders who can catch and can't hit, but they have outfielders who can't catch the ball and they can hit well. So, I mean, they have a lot of mismatched pieces is what they have.
Yes, a lot of pieces that don't seem to fit together. You like the pieces, but the sum of the group seems to be less than the whole.
Can you make a transition with a player in season to another position comfortably, or is that hard to do?
I think going from the infield to the outfield, if you have that, you know, fly ball skill, I think you can do that. But, you know, it depends on how, you know, what kind of baseball IQ you have when the ball goes up. You know, I think it's a little bit of a math situation. You have to see the apex, figure out where it's there and where it's going to be when it comes down. And if you get that, you usually could play the outfield relatively easily.
Hey, how good is Alonso?
Real good.
I mean, that's almost Harmon Killebrew. He's like, you know, or I don't want to, you know, McGuire or Joe Adcock, or you're talking about a big thumper at first base.
Yeah, he's spectacular in his ability to, you know, hit the breaking ball as well as drive the ball to right center field. If it's a little on the inside part of the plate, you know, it's great to see a guy know how to hit and not worry about pulling the ball all the time.
Yeah, and you know what? He's got a good. He thinks of the play. You can tell he sets guys up. He's not clueless up there and just wailing away. He's got an idea what he wants to do up there.
He has an idea, and I think he just needs the reps. There are a few pitches that are still a little mystery to him, you know, and that's you know, that's normal for a young guy. But once he sees more of them and you know, the computer understands what it is, you know, he's going to lay off for tougher pitches and hit some of those hangers a little easier, too.
Talking with Bobby Valentine. Bobby, what's the easiest, and this is not easy, because if it was easy, everyone would do it. What is the way to go about sorting out a disaster of a bullpen in season? You'd like to pull every, you'd like to get a new busload of guys and bring them all in. You can't do that. That aside, how do you figure out what piece works and what piece doesn't work when nothing's working?
It's very difficult. I had a situation like that in Boston. I threw up my hands about halfway through the season. It was hard to figure, and this one seems difficult too. But one of the things you do is you get the guys together. You got to figure out what they're thinking. There's a group thought out there in the bullpen, okay? And there are a bunch of individuals. They throw different pitches. They have different roles. But because they spend so much time together, there is group thought. And they just might be going against the grain continually against what that group thinks they're supposed to be doing. So, A, number one, you got to get them together and figure out what they're thinking.
Interesting. Is it trial and error? Do you give guys chances at with different roles, or do you go back to your basics and say, this is a guy I thought was going to be my eighth inning guy or my seventh inning guy? Because it seems like, listen, you got to leave Diaz alone, and hopefully they figure something out with him, get him back on track. But the other guys, I mean, we know Lugo can pitch, except he's not durable. The rest of the guys, they have been awful.
Yeah, I'm surprised, and I thought that they had the good idea. It looked like they went out to do the bullpen, and I said, yeah, if they're really concentrating on the bullpen, they probably are going to get it right. And, you know, maybe they'll get it right the second half. Maybe those parts are still there because they look healthy. Everyone's throwing it hard. They all have breaking balls, and they all make a really bad pitch at the absolute worst time in the game. And you start to feel that after a while, don't you? The other day, you kind of felt it coming with the three-run homer, and that's a bad place to be when you're feeling negativity like that.
What do you do with Cano?
Yeah. I think it's something about the second base thing. You got to understand, Carlos Baerga was spectacular.
Juan Samuel, Alomar. I mean, I'm
telling
you,
Alomar.
Hey, it's a curse. It's a curse. You got four guys. You got three of them were virtual Hall of Famers. Alomar is.
Yes.
I mean, and none of them could play again. Baerga used to kill the Yankees, and then he couldn't hit the ball when he went to the Mets. It was unbelievable. I mean, and now Cano looks the same part. He looks like there must be something in the water about second base over there.
I'm with you on that. When I watch him, I get the willies.
Yeah, he's
thinking about Baerga and then Robbie. You know what I mean? We got Robbie, and I thought he was kidding when Steve said, We got Robbie Alomar. I said, you have to be kidding. And that when I saw him, I realized why he wasn't kidding.
I mean, Cano's at-bats almost look like it's not Cano. It looks like it's somebody else.
Oh, looks like he's trying to hit a grounder to second and succeeding every time.
He's rolling over on every pitch. It's unbelievable.
Watch this. I can hit a grounder to second, everyone.
I, you know what? I, and you're right. It has happened so many times, and none of those guys broke out of it, which is scary when you think about it. You know that none of those guys succeeded. None of them ever got. Same thing with Bay. I mean, they just never got better.
It's a weird thing right now with Robinson Cano because, you know, that's not the guy that I even saw last year. And you know, on TV, I don't see him live even this year, but. You know, watching him on TV last year, he was a regular hitter.
You know,
he could drive the ball in the opposite way, hang a breaking ball, he hook it out of the ballpark. It doesn't look like he can handle any pitch right now.
And how about the Vulture being back in uniform? I mean, at 82, I mean, I know, Bobby, you come from, you probably, you rubbed elbows with the Vulture, I'm sure, many times, right?
I've known Phil forever, but, you know, he's 12, 13 years older than I am, and I'm too old to be there. So God bless him.
I tell
God bless him. They jogged out. You see him jogging out.
Hey, Eddie Coleman
back?
Told me
that's
the guy,
really cool.
He said he's got more energy than anybody there. So God bless him. But boy,
Forever. He's
82. That's unbelievable. I mean, I couldn't. I was looking for another guy. We can only find one guy in uniform at 70, and that's the Astros pitching coach. He's the only guy in the majors who's 70 years old.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of great experience with Phil. I'll tell you that. You know, Tommy had him in L.A., and, geez, I mean, when I was playing, he was coaching, I think. And, God bless him. That's all I got to say. I hope he does a good job because I think he's a very good person.
The analytics, could you still manage today with all this stuff? I mean, you were a smart guy. You were a very good athlete, but you also were a smart baseball guy. Could you handle all the input of all this information now and still do what you want to do as a manager?
Well, I'd like to think yes, only because I tried to get as much information as I could every day I ever managed. But, you know, like in the corporate world as well as the baseball world, with all this big data, Michael, as you well know, the key is to get that person who can stand between the data and the people who need the data and actually make it helpful. You know, the data doesn't jump off the page and all of a sudden help someone get an edge. The data has got to be interpreted in a couple different languages, obviously, and interpreted in many different ways so it's applicable to the older pitcher as well as the younger pitcher or hitter. And that's the challenge. And I think what you're seeing when you hear about these people who are in the clubhouse, the people who are trying to bring in the lineup or whatever it might be, is that they're the guys who are trying to implement the information. And that used to always be on just the manager and the coaches. You know, we'd get the printouts, we get the books, we get the, you know, the hit wear charts, we'd see what they did against our team in the past and try to predict what they're going to do in the future. But now there's guys who it's their only job is to crunch the numbers, figure out what might be an edge. And I think I'd love it if the person that was delivering it was a person with the skills that were needed to deliver it properly, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes plenty of sense. It does, because by itself, the information is just information. I mean, it has to serve a purpose, but somebody has to be able to analyze it and then explain it to the players. It got to go through the coaches and go through the players.
Well, you would think it should go right through the coaches if the coaches are speaking the language of the players.
Right.
You know, but I'm not sure that that's what's happening. And if that's what is happening, to answer your early question, I could not manage that.
And it seems like there's a lot of disconnects with a lot of teams now with this way. You know, there seems like there's a lot of this where you hear, oh, this guy couldn't deal with the analytic department or they couldn't deal with it. Seems like you're hearing that a lot now in baseball.
All over.
And you wonder
in the corporate world too.
And you wonder what the remedy is for that, you know?
Yeah, sometimes it's just time, you know, you have to let the new become old and then it's easy to accept. But it's an interesting world that we're living in, and the baseball world is still a lot of interest. I mean, to have such a big occurrence, you know, happen because of a situation during the game. You know, I mean, all that regurgitation of whatever was going on was because of the 3-run homer. If the 3-run homer wasn't hit, the Mets win that game. Everyone's kumbaya-ing. They're going on to get on a stretch, right?
Yep. Everything is he hung a curveball. He hung a breaking ball to Baez on an 0-2 pitch, and that started the whole thing running.
And here comes misery.
Amazing
world.
It really is when you think about it. And the guy, you know, and that takes us back to the home run. I mean, how about every night? I mean, 6-8 home runs every single night, Bobby. Now, I know guys are stronger, but something's going on. I mean, the ball, you saw a guy the other night, the call was, he popped it up and the ball went out of the ballpark. The announcer said, popped it up, this should be the ball game. And it was the ball game, all right? It was a walk-off home run.
Yeah. Yeah, the ball is juice. The bats are better than they've ever been. There's no doubt. I'm sure if someone was asked who makes the balls or buys the balls, they'll say, yes, the ball's different. And it has to be the inner corking of the ball, that thing that makes it a little more elastic when the bat and ball have that wonderful contact. Because professional outfielders don't run after balls, get to the warning track, and then look up and have the ball in the second deck. Okay, you just don't do that unless there's something abnormal going on. And it's almost every night you see it happening. As you say, a pop-up pitcher points at the ball. The infielder points at the ball. It's a home run. My goodness.
Yeah,
you got
guys throwing the bat down, and the ball's going in the seats.
Yeah, little guys reaching for the ball, little guys hitting the high pitch, you know, over the fence to the opposite field. It's really different, and it's gone too far. There's no question about that. I love highlights of baseball, but I hate watching the highlights now because it's just Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
You know, another swing, another ball in the stands. Another swing, another ball in the stands. Whoop-de-doo.
Yeah, absolutely,
you know,
right.
It's tough to do that stuff.
Very hard to do that stuff. Matter of fact, in the old days, only the big guys hit the ball to the opposite field. Now everybody does.
Exactly. Or a very few smaller guys. You know, Michael, there are a few of those guys that caught the ball a little deeper and the ball went deep. But you know what they didn't do? They didn't hit high flies to the opposite field. The high fly ball never went out off of the little guy's bat to the opposite field, and now it's a common occurrence.
It really is. All right, good talking to you. How's Bobby V's doing? Well, I heard someone went
Thank
up there and
bro.
Said it was doing very well, and one of the guys told me that they loved it. They said it was a great place, so it must be doing well.
You're a good man. It's doing great. Thank you, Michael. And Sacred Heart University is doing great, too.
Terrific.
How to get that in.
Thanks, Bobby.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Bobby V, back
Bye-bye.
After this.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.